At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the high-yield cash account on Public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
We'll do a little state budget math. We'll talk mortgages in a bit, and we'll take a swing out to Montana, too. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Wednesday today, the 11th day of January. Good as always to have you along, everybody. It has been a while, I think, since we have talked states, state budgets, state finances, and how the late-stage pandemic economy is treating them. And as it happens, the two most populous states in this nation are in very different fiscal places right now. California Governor Gavin Newsom is looking to patch a $23 billion budget deficit. Down in Texas, meanwhile, Governor Greg Abbott's thinking up a way to spend a $33 billion surplus. There will be no shortage of blue state, red state partisan bickering over the next couple of months, as you can imagine. But as Marketplace's Matt Levin reports now to get us going, this is more about this economy than it is about politics.
So every state is its own special fiscal snowflake with its own beautifully unique economy and tax structure. But generally speaking,
state budgets are doing well.
Richard Augier is with the Tax Policy Center.
But there is a bit of concern about what's on the horizon.
Most state budgets are kind of like your average household budget right now. Income is still rolling in. There's still some leftover pandemic aid from the feds. But it feels like a downturn may be coming. It's already hit a very big part of California's tax base, says Chris Haney at the California Budget and Policy Center.
Because we're a heavy tech economy, it means tech has a disproportionate impact on the state's revenues.
California depends a lot on a progressive personal income tax, and rich people's incomes depend a lot on the stock market. So in 2021, when a bunch of tech IPOs were minting new Silicon Valley millionaires, California ran a big surplus. But now, with Fed rate hikes stripping those tech unicorns of their billion-dollar horns,
there just haven't been nearly as many initial public offerings as there had been in prior years.
Texas has a growing tech scene of its own, but the state is still much more reliant on its oil and gas industry, which did really well last year after Russia invaded Ukraine. But that's only partly why Texas has such a big surplus.
Because Texas does not have a state personal income tax, it is very reliant on the sales tax.
Dick Levine is a budget specialist at the advocacy group Every Texan.
And because of inflation, people were having to pay more for everything they bought. And the sales tax revenues are expected to jump.
Levine says there's an obvious downside, though. Even if inflation means more revenue, it also means all of the goods and services state agencies buy are more expensive, too. I'm Matt Levin for Marketplace.
Wall Street midweek, a lot of green, in part, perhaps, because the new president of the Boston Fed told the New York Times today that she's leaning toward a quarter percentage point rate increase when next the Federal Open Market Committee meets. That'd be the last day of this month and the first day of the next month. Traders and the algorithms they love do love any hint of a less tight Fed, you know. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. One of the things that's been happening as the Fed's been raising rates is that the mortgage business has gotten a little bit trickier. Higher rates and sticky home prices make home buying less possible for a whole lot of people in this economy, which does go part of the way to explaining why Wells Fargo has announced it's pulling way back on its mortgage business. It's still going to do some, but not nearly as much as it had been doing. A big change for a company that used to be the top mortgage lender in the country. Wells does have a messy history. We've talked about that quite a bit. And don't discount the impact of those higher rates. But this is also part of a bigger change in the mortgage market overall over the past decade or so, with big banks pulling back and non-bank lenders stepping up. Marketplace's Samantha Fields has that one.
It used to be that if you wanted a mortgage, you went to your bank or a bank.
That all changed after the Great Recession, after the Great Financial Crisis.
Susan Wachter is a professor of real estate and finance at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania. She says there's been a huge shift in the mortgage market since then, largely because there are so many more regulations on banks now around mortgage lending.
That and the perceived risk of mortgages and the penalties that were imposed for mortgages that were not correctly originated led banks to exit, and to exit in a stunningly transformative large way.
Now, a decade and a half after the Great Recession, non-bank lenders, companies like Rocket Mortgage, dominate the mortgage market. Tomas Piskorski is a professor of real estate at Columbia Business School.
These non-bank lenders do not face the same regulatory burden.
The same regulatory burden that big banks now face.
So in some sense, the regulation following Great Recession has given them the competitive edge.
He says more intense regulation is the biggest reason so many banks have pulled back from writing mortgages, but not the only one. They also lagged with technology.
Banks were slow to adopt online instantaneous fintech loan origination platforms.
Non-bank lenders were much quicker to offer easy access to mortgages online. And Piskorski says that also helped them attract a lot of business.
Customers really loved them because they could get their loan much quicker than going through a traditional bank.
In 2007, non-bank lenders wrote about a quarter of new mortgages. In 2021, it was nearly two-thirds. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
The marquee event of this economic week comes tomorrow, 8:30 Washington time, the December Consumer Price Index. Today, though, one of our barometers of consumers and of prices via Butte, Montana and the Butte Plaza Mall, where Alana Furco is the manager. Hi, Alana. How are you?
Happy New Year, Guy. How are you?
I'm well. I'm well. How have things been at the Butte Plaza Mall?
You know, things have been okay. Yeah, we're not soggy like you guys are.
There's a lot of rain in California. Holidays were good to you business-wise?
You know, holidays were good. People just were wonderful. I miss them so much already. Yeah, they spent a lot. They smiled a lot. They made us feel good.
Do you ever worry about like some of the macroeconomic things like inflation and people talking about recession and all that? Or are you just like, if people come in the mall, life is good?
You know, we definitely worry about it. If people are worried about it, most definitely we better pay attention. But Christmas time, I just live by the theory that people want their kids happy. So that's usually when they will put out the money in a pinch.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a very generous community. We've got a lot of nonprofits. Hmm. And, you know, that always makes me feel good to be involved with that as well.
Yeah, I bet. Okay, so other than people shopping at the holidays, what's been going on by you?
Well, I think last we spoke, I had mentioned that we were going to be a main spot for a production that was filmed here in Butte. Mm-hmm. And the production company is on hiatus right now. They are putting things into storage and wrapping it up. They'll be gone, I think, by the end of the month and then be back late spring because another season of the production has been ordered.
This was 1932? Was that the name of the show?
1923. Yes. Well, no, you were right, though. Originally, right. It was 1932, but then he bumped it up to 23.
And they rent space from you and all of that? I mean, we've been through the anchor tenants leaving and the call center thing. So they're renting some of those big spaces?
They actually have rented the call center space, and they have wardrobe and some of the set deck and props out of there. They rented our north former department store space. They used that originally for the extras. They would have 200 to 300 to 400 extras. They would all meet here, park on the mall parking lot because we have plenty of parking, get dressed, hair and makeup, have breakfast, and then catch the buses and go up to the filming locations.
That's like Hollywood North for you. Hey, so look, did you meet anybody
Absolutely.
Famous?
I guess in passing I did, but no. The most famous person I met was Gator, who is the caterer.
Wow. Well, there you go.
He's the cook for the Dutton family, and that was fun.
What about...
But no, I haven't met...
Sorry, you haven't met who?
I haven't met any of the top stars.
Well, maybe they'll hear this and they'll come seek you out. What about the walkers? Are the walkers back?
Walkers are back, and the health department has started up their 2023 Walk with Ease. So they're here Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. We've got quite a contingency today. Good. Well, and some of the walkers used to walk at the Civic Center, which was also rented out to the production company. They're going to reopen, I think, at the end of this month. And some of my people are kind of split on their loyalties. They're like, okay, maybe we'll just walk here on Mondays and Fridays, and we'll walk at the Civic Center on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. They're just so funny.
You got some competition for the walkers, though. I think that's interesting.
We have competition, yes. Well, I'm going to say I treat them better. But
oh, of course
we have some of them that bring us cookies. They're just adorable.
The gist of this conversation that I'm getting from you is that as opposed to like a year and a half ago, things are actually pretty good.
You know, yes, I'm going to say we're on an uptick. I think as a country, we've been striving for that. Yeah. I know as a community, we have been.
The community in question is Butte, Montana, the Butte Plaza Mall. Alana Furco runs it. Thank you, Alana. We'll talk to you soon.
You take care, Kai.
Coming up.
Oh, you know, we noticed that your social media presence isn't where you want it to be.
I know. I'm working on it. First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's up 268 today. That is 0.8%, 33,973. The NASDAQ grew 189 points, about 1.75%, 10,931. The S&P 500 was up 50 points, 1.3%, almost 39.69 there. We heard from Samantha Fields about the changing mortgage business. Wells Fargo's mostly getting out of it. Wells Fargo up 0.9% today. Competitor Invesco Mortgage Capital lifted 0.3%. Since the outage, you probably heard this, caused the Federal Aviation Administration to ground all domestic departures this morning in airline stocks. Thus, United soared 4.3% today. JetBlue went up 1.8%. American Airlines ascended almost 1%. Rolling Stones guitarist and former art student Ronnie Wood recently submitted accounts that show his successful side hustle, selling his paintings. He's doing pretty well. £1,437,277 last year. That's about $1.75 million American dollars at today's exchange rate. That is the most he's made from his art in a single year. The first time he's cracked a million, if you're a Stones fan. Bonds fell. Yield on the 10-year T-note up to 3.54%. You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. The World Economic Forum, they of the gathering of the global rich in Davos, but also observers of the global economy, just released their annual Global Risk Report. And things are maybe not so good. The WEF highlighted a long list of interconnected economic threats, from global inflation to the war in Ukraine to climate change, that will be competing for attention and resources in 2023. And the report warns that these threats could feed off and compound one another, creating what the WEF calls a polycrisis. Marketplace's Savannah Marr has more on that.
There have been lots of recent shocks to the global economy, and the way economists talk about them is starting to get a little scary.
We currently are in the midst of a polycrisis, if you will.
Sadia Zahidi contributed to the WEF's report.
with food and energy crises unfolding at the same time as a geopolitical conflict, at the same time as an economic downturn.
So boy, it presents a pretty gloomy picture about where the world is and where it's headed.
Ishwar Prasad, a professor at Cornell, says if all that didn't raise your blood pressure, these crises are feeding into each other. For example, the war in Ukraine is fueling global inflation. Meanwhile,
in general, short-term pressures and problems
like food and energy shortages
tend to overwhelm consideration of problems where the real costs are going to show up in the longer term.
Like the worst impacts of climate change. In 2023, Prasad says efforts to get the cost of living in check could come at the expense of urgently needed climate investments. But one limitation of the WEF's report is that it's based on poll results from late summer and early fall. And since then,
inflation in the United States has peaked. It has peaked in Europe.
Jacob Kierkegaard is with the Peterson Institute.
Because of that, I think identifying cost of living crisis as the most urgent issue is wrong and overly alarmist.
He's optimistic 2023 will be marked by deflation in the global economy, barring another global disaster, of course. And after the last 3 years, we can't exactly bank on that. I'm Savannah Marr for Marketplace.
So you've got what the World Economic Forum's talking about, the looming global polycrises. But if you're running a small business in this economy, your focus is a little bit closer to home. Inflation, maybe a soft landing, maybe not. Whatever consumers are thinking at any given time. You throw in a new COVID wave and it just gets tough for a business owner to plan. And that is showing up in surveys. I think we mentioned this yesterday, that the National Federation of Independent Business's latest readings are that business owners are pretty pessimistic about conditions over the next 6 months. So Marketplace's Justin Ho called a couple of those small businesses to see how they are thinking about the year ahead.
For Bright Start Early Care and Preschool in Washington, D.C., how things turn out in the year ahead will depend a lot on what happens in the labor market. Owner Marcia St. Hilaire Fenn says if more people enter the labor force, more people will need childcare. But
if industries or employers are cutting back, and the families that we serve, they lose their job. Usually the first thing people do is, you know, if I'm home, my child's going to be home.
So St. Hilaire Fenn says her strategy this year is to build up her cash reserves in case business slows down. Thing is, she says there aren't that many ways for her to bring down costs. She can't afford to cut employees, and her rent is non-negotiable. So instead, she's focusing on beefing up her revenue by expanding to a new floor in the building.
We're adding a new level, a third level, to increase our capacity by 50%.
That'll mean Bright Start Early Care and Preschool will be able to take in 48 new kids. And even though her costs will rise, she says her income will rise more.
Childcare is a numbers game, right? The more children you have in the same building, the more revenue you intake.
Expanding isn't always easy when customers are nervous about the economy. Madeline Reeves owns a consulting company called Fearless Foundry, which helps other businesses with their marketing, business strategy, and design.
Normally, yeah, January is a time for a lot of new business for us. And there are a lot of projects going on for our existing clients, which is great, but we're definitely seeing some hesitation.
So instead of trying to add new clients, Reeves says she's aiming to work more with her existing ones.
And simply showing up and saying things like, oh, you know, we noticed that your social media presence isn't where you want it to be. Is that something we can help you with?
Focusing on the clients she already has ensures Reeves can keep the lights on.
Having that baseline monthly recurring revenue means that I can afford to continue operating my business, which does put me in a stable position if there is any sort of economic downturn.
Meanwhile, businesses that sell goods are still facing supply chain problems. Catherine Reynolds handles imports at Palmetto Tile Distributors in South Carolina.
I'm still seeing things slow in Europe with my factories. I'm still seeing some closures going on and slower production rates.
And a lot of the factories she buys tile from keep announcing that they'll be raising prices. So Reynolds has been trying out a new tactic.
When I get the increased notices from my factory, I try to order deep so that I have really, really healthy inventory so that that price increase, when it does hit, it doesn't hit us nearly as fast or as hard.
Maintaining healthy inventory right now also ensures that a business can sell customers what they want in the first place. Greg Warwick is CEO of the equipment supplier TMB Baking near San Francisco.
Like, let's say we're talking about a spiral mixer for mixing dough, and a customer's breaks down. Somebody else says, well, you can have it in 3 or 4 months, and we can say, well, you can have it in a week, then we're going to be the choice.
Warwick says the company is also stepping up its marketing efforts to make sure customers know what it has in stock. That's because sales, Warwick says, are what keeps the company afloat.
Sales is the key to any healthy business. And so we're not making any fundamental changes in our business. We're just working to grow it.
In the meantime, Warwick says he's keeping in touch with his bank, just in case he needs to draw on his line of credit to pay for all that inventory. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
Work for millions of people in this economy is just different now. Those of us who are lucky enough not to have to go to the office. Many more millions of people, though, do have to show up to get the job done. Among them, nurses, who are, along with many others in medicine, dealing with burnout like never before. From WPLN, Blake Palmer reports now on work-from-home options that might keep experienced RNs on the job just a little bit longer.
There was a week at the peak of the pandemic when John Donga of Albuquerque held the hands of more dying people than he had in more than a decade of being a nurse. Even though the job had become so stressful, he never considered leaving until he fell at home and seriously hurt his knee. He still tried to walk the halls and lift patients through the pain.
I literally got home that day and I laid down on the couch and I was icing my knee and I was at the point of tears telling my wife, I don't know what I'm going to do.
At 50, he's the sole breadwinner. Plus, he still loved helping patients in the emergency department.
I wasn't ready to quit nursing. I was not ready to stop helping people.
Then his employer, Loveless Medical Center, started a pilot project.
Do you mind if I turn on the camera so I can talk to you?
For the last few months, Donga has been beaming in on rooms. The hospital installed sophisticated cameras in the emergency department. Patients see Donga's friendly face on flat-screen monitors, and in the case of this patient, Donga's in and out in 1 minute.
Okay. Well, if you need anything, please let me know. I'm here to help, okay?
Donga says he can see the massive potential beyond being able to work despite having trouble walking. He'd never considered being able to telecommute from home when the weather's bad. That could soon be a reality, though for now he's doing his virtual rounds from within the hospital, and he's checking in on 15 patients an hour.
Half the time I'm seeing those patients, you know, they're asleep or they're not in the room, but, you know, I'm easily able to do that. And I can see where I can do 20 or 30, depending on what they're going to need. So yeah, one virtual nurse can really help a lot.
His remote visits are supposed to free up in-person nurses so they can spend time with those who really need face-to-face attention. But Donga says his one concern is that this form of automation isn't used to hire fewer nurses. And nurse unions across the country aren't just concerned, they're actively fighting any remote experiments, as they call them. Michelle Mahan of National Nurses United says she could never be convinced a hospital's making such business decisions in the interest of patients or nurses.
They are so unwilling to invest in nursing that they will spend millions and millions of dollars on technology that is not effective, that is not providing the same level of care.
The technology in Albuquerque comes from Orlando-based Care AI, and President Bruce Brandes says implementation is intentionally slow to help gain buy-in, especially since many technologies in hospitals have made life harder, not easier, for staff. Care AI is learning on the go. For example, that beaming in a nurse from out of town is less desirable.
It really goes a long way to ensure that you're not outsourcing who that virtual nurse is, that it's actually one of the members of your team, particularly an experienced member of your team, so they're inherently trusted out of the gate.
In working with Ardent Health, which owns the Albuquerque Hospital, the companies have also found one of the best uses of time for a virtual nurse is on discharge paperwork. Ardent CEO Marty Bonick says nurses put it off, occupying rooms that could be freed up.
I know it's going to take me 30, 45 minutes to do those discharge instructions. I don't have time to do that because I've got four other patients that need me actively. And so what happens is those discharges get put off.
Virtual nursing may be starting small at Ardent. So far, it's just in New Mexico and more recently, Idaho. But Bonick says he plans to expand virtual nursing to all 30 of the company's hospitals. He says the growing demand for experienced nurses requires rethinking the job.
If we don't find new ways of caring for patients and extending and augmenting the work that our nurses do, we've got two choices.
Either turn patients away, he says, or keep working nurses so hard that they keep leaving. In Nashville, I'm Blake Farmer for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, you know, one takes those every now and then, surveys of the best places to work with a grain of salt, or, you know, one should. But there is one out from Glassdoor that's got a bit of a surprise in it. For the first time in more than 10 years, neither Meta nor Apple are on Glassdoor's 2023 list. New entries this year, Spotify and Lego. All right, we are out of here. Not, of course, without your moment of economic context, a very faint glimmer of hope for those left high and very dry by the implosion of the cryptocurrency exchange FTX. The company said in bankruptcy filings today that it's found more than $5 billion in cash and other liquid assets, unclear as to exactly where all that money was found. The company also said it's going to try and sell other holdings worth a bit more than $4.5 billion. Still, and although, it is going to be a long, long haul, that bankruptcy process. Our media production team includes Brian Allison, Jake Cherry, Drew Jostad, Gary O'Keefe, Jeff Peters, Charlton Thorpe, Juan Carlos Torrado, and Becca Weinman. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.